This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions, both online at www.bgov.com and on the air Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30 right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week, we're bringing the world of healthcare into focus with a return visit from healthcare analyst Matt Berry. You remember him. He's that analyst with BGov who walked us through the potential exposures hospitals and insurance companies may face as a result of a deficit deal. Well, in the second and final installment, he walks us through the exposures in his latest study called Home Health Providers at Risk in Deficit Deal, Not So Drug Makers. Matt will be here in just a little while. But we're kicking off today's show with a study I know is going to get your attention. I'm talking about a tax credit that could directly impact an estimated 30 million Americans. There's only one problem. It's been tried before, and it didn't really go as planned. The study's called Health Tax Credit. Past experience points to lower revenue. Its author, senior healthcare analyst Peter Goslin. Peter, thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
So, definitely got me intrigued, the study that you've put together, because of past performance of said tax credit, and I'm doing the air quotes. If past performance stands for anything, my guess is this may be yet another flop.
Well, it's going to be much harder than we've official Washington has assumed it's going to be. Official Washington and lots of the healthcare industry has assumed that the CBO numbers are pretty much on the mark. They're the best we've got. Mm-hmm. And I estimate that CBO is guessing that about two-thirds of the people who are eligible for these really the centerpiece of the insurance reforms in the Affordable Care Act, about two-thirds of those who are eligible will take them up. So I decided to take a look at the few experiences we've had in the past with using tax credits to get to expand health insurance coverage. And they don't paint a very happy picture. Now, in all fairness, they're a lot smaller than what's envisioned here. There are some reinforcing elements of the Affordable Care Act that could help this one be more successful than the past ones. But they didn't have a lot of success the last two times out trying to use these
late
things.
Late 90s or early 90s. Early 90s. Early 2000s.
Right.
I'm sensing a lot of backpedaling. Not from you, not from anybody other than the CBO. They're saying, you know, 30 million Americans could be eligible for this, but they're expecting maybe 20 million may take advantage. Oh, but if 15 million do it, it would still be considered okay, but it may be as low as 7 million. Am I understanding that correctly?
CBO hasn't used all those numbers, but there are loads of people who are smart on this issue say that there's a huge range that that implementation could fall within terms of getting people in. Look, the way you've got to think about this law, and it's hard to think about it because it keeps coming right up to the edge of the cliff and almost falling over.
Right.
And we're coming up to the edge of another cliff, which is November 6th in the presidential election. Governor Romney has said that if he is elected on day one, along with all the other things he's going to do on day one, he'll move to repeal Obamacare. Now, I think as realistically, that's not going to be as easy as said as done as said, but that's another cliff that the law is going to walk up to. Even if a president who wants to see this law work ends up in office and gets four years of trying to implement it, the fact is this is a decade or a two-decade process. When Medicare and Medicaid were created in the 1960s, it took multiple law changes to get them, to tweak them to work.
Right.
And this is going to take a lot of tweaking and blind alleys and
Well, and they've still got a little bit of time to make that happen. This doesn't roll out until 2014. By the way, we're talking to Peter Goslin. He's the editor, writer of Health Tax Credit, brand new study. It's called Past Experience Points to Lower Revenue. Peter is a senior healthcare analyst with Bloomberg Government. Tax credits started scheduled to begin rolling out around 2014. Take about 7 years to be fully implemented. Why so long?
Oh, well, it's not a long time before they start. So right now, today,
sure.
For many people, including employees of Bloomberg, it's open enrollment season.
Of course.
It's the time when we decide what our benefits should be for next year. Next open enrollment season, October 1st of next year, will be the first open enrollment for this new, yet to be fully established
right.
system for buying health insurance for people who don't get it like we do through our employer. So there's less than a year to get the basic framework for this tax credit, which is designed to help people who are above poverty, but for a family of four below about $92,000 help
right.
pay for health insurance. There's less than a year to get the bugs out of this and get the system that will determine eligibility in place. There's less than a year to create these new institutions in the states that are willing to go along with a law called health insurance exchanges. There's less than a year for America's health insurance industry to decide whether they're going to participate in these exchanges and what products they're going to offer. There is a huge amount of work to do,
yeah.
and it's hard to imagine that it will all get done or it will all get done everywhere. So one of the reasons it's going to take a lot of years to fully roll out is it's not going to roll out evenly in all places. And so there will be some states where this thing works, and there will be some that where it doesn't work the first year out and a few more the next year. And presumably we'll smack into a wall and run into problems in a bunch of states, and we'll have to do fixes. And so the reason why CBO and other analysts say it's going to take quite a time to roll out is because there's a lot to making it work.
Lots of pieces that are going in to make this puzzle. And with an election right around the corner, we don't truly know which pieces belong in the box yet.
Yeah, that's right. And it's already slowed it down because the administration has been very reluctant to put out regulations and guidance because they just don't want to stir the pot.
This
is a very, very close election. So I think come November 7th, mm-hmm. the day after the election, one way or the other, you're just going to see a torrent of regulations and guidance that have been, many of them have been written but just have never been released, that people need, that states need to design exchanges, that insurers need to design product, that different parts of the federal government need to figure out how the system is going to work. This stuff has got to roll out fast, and it should have been out a long time ago from a pure policy point of view, but the politics didn't allow it. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to come out in the next month, 2 months.
Did they learn anything from the two previous attempts? I mean, are they going?
Yeah, no. No, look, there are parts of this law that reflect
lessons learned.
Lessons learned. Yeah, I mean, one of the problems with the previous two tax credits is they never said anywhere what counted as insurance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was it a policy that just covered, you know, podiatry, or was it a policy that covered? So this law goes right at that matter. It defines a benefit package. It defines a structured market in which that benefit package will be sold. So it does take, it's not the same thing. The problem is that for every place where they corrected a problem in the previous credit, they seem to have added a problem that the previous credits didn't have.
Well, let's talk about that, because you've addressed a couple of them in the study here. Let's talk about the premise of auto enrollment. Taking a page from the 401k scenario.
We learned a lot about the issue of people making decisions about all sorts of benefits, not just health care, but,
sure.
but also retirement. These are complicated decisions, and people's sort of default position is to say, I think I'll put that off,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And in retirement, in the retirement arena, retirement savings arena, lawmakers realize is bad. There are people coming up on retirement and they don't have enough money. And so in 2006, we actually changed the retirement,
and then
the
guess
law.
Guess who's going to foot the bill?
Yeah.
Hey!
Yeah. Either that or people are going to live in poverty.
There
I mean, so that in 2006, the law was changed so that employers can default people into a 401k or other retirement plan. And if they want to opt out, that's fine. That's their right. But they start in and they end up out. Now, that there's a lot similar to health insurance, mm-hmm. Because it's complicated. People don't know quite what to look for. People are likely to put it off. And, in fact, the authors of the law realize that, and there are provisions in the law that would would require auto-enrollment for many employers, or allow auto-enrollment, actually require auto-enrollment in the case of many employers. The problem is that the Department of Labor, which is the department that has authority over those sections, have decided to indefinitely delay implementation of those portions of the law.
Right.
So there are provisions in the law for that, but they're not going to be implemented certainly in the early going here, certainly in this coming open enrollment period next year.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. I'm here with Peter Goslin, Senior Healthcare Policy Analyst with Bloomberg Government, who's written a study, Health Tax Credit, Past Experience Points to Lower Revenue. So within the study, we're talking about issues that people may come across as they are rolling this plan out, one of which we talked about just a second ago, the auto enrollment scenario, let's say. And you touched on it during that. Kind of complicated.
Look, Alan, the thing that causes cranial bleeding here is, I mean, the thing that's so complicated that it makes your head hurt is not so much the buying of insurance, hard though that is, but it's getting this help from the federal government, the subsidy for low, moderate income families. The problem is that, and this is one of the problems that tax credits is a general proposition. Tax credits to encourage things that the society decides it wants to encourage or discourage things that it wants to discourage. It's a perfectly legitimate tool, and it's used in lots of different areas. The problem with using it in health insurance is that you want to make the lawmakers want to make it tied to people's income. Well, what income are we talking about? Well, usually it's the income in the same year that you're getting the insurance. But wait a minute. You need the coverage from the get-go of that year,
right.
But you're not going to know about what income you had until the end of that year. So you need what you're buying at the beginning, and you need the figure that gives you determines whether you're eligible, and you only get it at the end. So what the system that is set up, amazing though it sounds, is basically going into this next year at open enrollment, people are going to walk in the door of these exchanges or go online, and they're going to be asked to give their best guess about what their income in the coming year is. And if they're right, dandy. If they're wrong, if in fact they make more income than they thought they were going to make or than they said they were going to make, and they get a credit in advance for that, they get help from the federal government paying for their insurance, the federal government's going
to
claw back a lot of that.
And that
is going to be a very, very popular maneuver, particularly because they will never have seen this money.
Right.
This money doesn't go to doesn't come to them in a check. This money goes straight to the insurer they picked. So, you know, come around next tax time, you know, and they suddenly see a few thousand dollars they didn't know they owed the federal government.
Right.
Can be very popular.
Yeah, obviously far more here in this study that we could cover in a short period of time. Take a look at the study if you have the opportunity. It's the Health Tax Credit. Past experience points to lower revenue. What should we take away from this?
So here's my takeaway. In a bunch of studies that I've done for Bloomberg Government, what I've tried to do is say, here's a problem. Let's be realistic about what's available to fix it. One of the things that's not realistic is to think you're going to get big law changes. Whether the president is reelected, whether Governor Romney is elected, whether the Senate goes to the Republicans or the Democrats, this is going to be a divided government. And that means there's not a lot of opportunity for law changes to fix the jigs in this system.
Right.
So what I say in the study is you have to look to what's available in the study. And the big thing that has not been used much. There's not, they have not set up the system, gone very far in setting up the system to make work, is consumer assistance. Now, this is real flat-footed grunt work when it comes to running a program. But when you look at the few cases where these previous tax credits that I looked at worked, it's when either local officials or a governor and a state administration or a union went out and they said, we're going to find everybody who's potentially eligible. We are going to help them out with the forms. We're going to tell them. We're going to figure out where they need to send things, or we're going to help them send it there. And when there's an administrative snafu, we're going to help sort it out. It's tough work. It's slow work. But it's the thing. The law envisions that we're going to need that kind of consumer assistance, consumer support, consumer outreach. And the law provides the health law provides money for that, and that's the only thing that's going to save the system. We're going to have to put more emphasis on doing good consumer assistance.
His name is Peter Gosling. The study is called Health Tax Credit. Past experience points to lower revenue. Peter, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks
for having me. So there are a lot of things that politicians really can't agree on. But one thing that we can all agree that they agree on is something needs to be done with the deficit. Kind of hammering out that potential deficit deal is going to have an impact on the medical world and all that it encompasses. Healthcare analyst Matt Berry tackled that topic in a two-part Bloomberg government study. Part one, we discussed with him back in September, dealt with hospitals and health insurers. Well, he's back now with part two, home health providers at risk in deficit deal, not so much for drug makers. Matt, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's take a step back and discuss the previous study for starters. What was our takeaway from that one?
Big takeaways from the first study were that both hospitals and health insurers had significant exposure to a deficit deal. And when we talk about exposure here, what we're talking about is the percent of their revenues that are coming from Medicare and Medicaid.
Right.
And we want to look at that because if we think there's going to be a budget deal, and if we think it's going to be credible, those are two big ifs, and you're going to have to deal with federal health spending, since both those programs account for about one out of every four federal dollars that is spent. And within those programs, hospitals and health insurers account for about half the spending.
It's like one in every four federal dollars for Medicaid and Medicare alone.
Absolutely.
Coming from the government.
And for hospitals, what we saw is about a third to, in one case, about 45% of their dollars are coming from the Medicare and Medicaid programs, most of it coming from Medicare. Health insurers were a little bit more mixed. We saw on a high end, a company like Humana with about two-thirds of its revenue mm-hmm. coming from both programs, most of it from Medicare. On the low end, a company like Cigna with less than 20% of the revenue, and then the others kind of in the 20 to 30 to 40% range.
So let's dive into this one. Home health providers at risk in deficit deal, not so much drug makers. And I'm kind of intrigued as to why. Let's take a look at home health for starters.
Well, home health providers of any of the companies and industries we've looked at are the most exposed of all the companies. So actually, if you rank these companies, of all the companies we looked at, the top three are home health companies. The most exposed is Gentiva Health Services. Mm-hmm. They have nearly 90% of their revenue coming from Medicare and Medicaid. So you're talking companies that don't have much wiggle room. Their revenue is exclusively coming from the U.S. market, and most of their customers are coming just from either Medicare or Medicaid. So they don't have many places to go for that type of service. And then just below the home health providers are nursing homes. Nine out of the top 10 most exposed companies that we've looked at were either home health providers or nursing home companies.
Typical clientele being of the age or the financial backing.
Absolutely.
That's the category they're going to fall into.
Yes, yes. If you look at if one of the ways you want to look at exposure, if you look at all these different companies we looked at and some of the sectors they're in, if you looked at it like a layer cake on some level, mm-hmm. where you had basically four layers of cake and a swirl in the batter. So our top layers are most exposed, the bottom layers are least exposed. From the top working down, you have home health providers, you've got nursing homes, you've got hospitals, and you've got drug makers. And then the swirl is the health insurers, because they're kind of scattered from top to bottom in terms of their exposure.
Gentiva, most exposed as a result of this. Is this a prime opportunity for them, as a deficit deal does come to fruition, to start thinking acquisition, merger? What could potentially happen to them?
Well, I think whether it's a
looking
company,
overseas, maybe.
I think it's whether it's Gentiva or any of these companies are probably either going to become targets themselves of a merger or acquisition, or are going to be looking for how can you diversify your portfolio. And one of the reasons I think we see the drug makers have the least exposure is, especially among the major drug makers, the companies like Pfizer, like Merck and Sanofi, the majority of their revenue is coming from outside the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's a trend that's simply been growing over, if you just look back over the past 5 years, where 5 years ago for almost each of these five major drug makers, we saw their revenue was actually in the majority in the U.S. market back in 2007, 2008, and now in almost every instance that we looked at is now a majority is overseas. And then a fraction of that domestic revenue is coming from Medicare and Medicaid. So they have a lot less exposure and there's a lot more opportunity overseas. So they have a little bit less to worry about. You see a company on the health insurer side like United Health Group, where a majority of its revenue currently are coming from Medicare and Medicaid. They just made a very big acquisition in Brazil of the largest health insurer down there. Now, in their public statements for that acquisition, they didn't talk about kind of diversifying or reducing their exposure to a deficit deal, but it certainly has that effect in the U.S. market. In the event there is a budget deal that hits these programs, at least they're not as reliant as they are today on those for sources of revenue in case there are reductions in payment.
So if we could take away something from the pairing of studies, what would it be?
The extent to which lawmakers and the deal makers on the budget will take into consideration those existing cuts that are on the books already that are set to take effect, some of which have already started to take effect, whether that will steer a deal in one direction if they feel that certain providers have already kind of given their pound of flesh to a deficit deal, or if they think, you know, if we cut any more, we're really going to start to impact in a negative way access to care, quality of care, and from a business standpoint, you know, the profitability of those markets and those industries. So I think we're going to have to keep a close eye on it. As Peter alluded to previously, with all the different things that need to happen for this law to keep going into effect in 2014 is if they extend the time frame, some of these deadlines from 2014 into 2015 or 2016, it not only buys them time on the administrative side to kind of work out some of the problems and challenges that they have, but it also gives them two more years in a budget window. So you have 2 years of savings with regard to the Affordable Care Act that you otherwise wouldn't have had that might give some of these companies a little bit of a reprieve, at least in the short term going forward. So how all those things play out, we're obviously going to be taking a close look at and monitoring closely.
Many thanks to both Peter Goslin and Matt Berry for joining me today. Look for both their studies in the exclusive section on BGov. Don't forget to watch Capital Gains on WUSA 9. It's hosted by Peter Cook. It'll be on right after Face the Nation Sundays at 11:30. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at BloombergGov. And for show updates, follow me at Alan L. Scott. Why don't we get together again next Thursday at 11? We'll have plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.
Do government actions impact your business? When you need to know the impact of legislative, regulatory, and government spending actions on your business, turn to Bloomberg Government. Bloomberg Government is a web-based service with comprehensive government-related news, data, and analysis. From government spending and federal contract data to legislative and regulatory updates to empower you to make informed decisions. To learn more about Bloomberg Government and to register for a live demonstration, visit bgov.com, where government actions meet business decisions.